I was either eye candy or a clear shot target. By that time, I wore a manly beard along with my mustache, which I kept trim, not shaggy. My red-black hair curled down to just above my shoulders. I wore an embroidered headband to keep it out of my eyes. No, I'm not lying. I am lying. I wore the headband because it looked pretty. My hippie boy flower power ensemble was so sweet it made me feel like a girl. I think it's true that girls dress for other girls. And the girls of Scientology liked my taste.
When I was in Seattle, there was a showcase to which my friend Elliot brought me. Queer writers read from their work, and among them was Kate Bornstein, who read from her memoirs. It was powerful, smart, and very entertaining. And here is my interview with an amazing person who both inspires, cares, and makes a difference. Here's Kate Bornstein. I'm sitting here with...
Kate Bornstein is my name. Hi.
Could you tell me what kind of work you do?
I write books about postmodern gender theory. My most recent book is about alternatives to suicide for teens, freaks, and other outlaws. I have a political blog. I do performance art. I write plays. I am a queer youth advocate, and I love food.
Do you cook a lot?
Yes, I do. I do cook a lot. It's one of my most relaxing moments when I cook, yes.
I heard you spent time in Europe. I was wondering what you think are the main cultural differences, the States compared to Europe?
Europe knows that the rest of the world exists, and in the States we don't know anything beyond our own borders. When I first went over to Europe and watched a news report, it was shocking. It was shocking to me that there was so much going on in the world that I didn't know. I went, oh my God, oh my God. And so now I try to tune in European newscasts in English so I can understand them because I'm so stupid and insular. And I watch BBC News, but I can't stand American news reporting anymore. It's divisive. It's as divisive as our President George W. Bush has made the rest of the country. There's a difference between queer scene and LGBT scene in the United States. There is a division, and LGBT would be more of a mainstream assimilationist. Again, insular. We are what matters to American LGBTs is all that matters, and the queer scene in the States is trying to incorporate its position within marginalized communities. LGBT is not trying to do that at all. And in Europe, what I've noticed, well, in England, the LGBT scene is much more inclusive of other marginalized communities and much more welcoming and outreaching. I'm not that familiar. And Germany. Same in Germany. Those are the areas that I've been a little bit familiar with.
It's funny because I've lived in Norway, Berlin, and in London. Do you think the queer scenes are the same in those three countries?
No, goodness no. No. Each country is insular in its own way. I'm not saying that the States is the only insular country. I mean, England is England and always will be England and never will be Berlin and never will be Norway. And Norway would do just fine without the rest of the world, from what I saw. We're getting along fine. If you'd like to come join us, that's fine. In Berlin, it was come join the party. And the party becomes political. The political becomes a party. They're pushing out the edges in Berlin. In London, it's much more politicized than it is party, although the trans element in London is now encouraging much more of a party environment, which to the stiff upper lip Londonese is disconcerting.
How do you think it is to be a trans person in Europe, or like compared to the States? Do you think it's easier or harder?
Wow. Being a trans person in the States truly depends on what state you're in. And not only that, it depends on are you talking rural or are you talking urban. Within urban centers, the notion of trans is becoming more and more tolerated. And I use the word clearly, tolerated, not accepted, not celebrated, but we're more and more tolerated within urban settings. I don't know that that tolerance is there in beyond urban borders in England. I think there is an embracing. I saw an embracing of trans folk in Norway. That's what I saw. But then again, I was with a whole group of queer kids, 14 to 31. In Germany, I don't know, because all I was at in Germany was parties.
What would you change in the States in the queer scenes? What would you take from Europe and change here?
I think that Europe and the United States could develop a really good cultural exchange program. I think that what Europe could use more of from the United States is the way the United States has tried, not completely successfully, but more successfully than Europe, to deal with racism. And I think we've made much more progress than that than I've seen in Europe. So I would like Europe to take a lesson from the leaders who fight for racial equity. In terms of LGBT, what I would like from Europe is an understanding that it is not a class-based movement. And in the United States, LGBT has become a class-based movement of, well, you know, you want the American dream, you want the house, you want the car, you want marriage, you want babies, and oh my God, I don't want any of that. And you have a great deal to teach us, and that we do not have to listen to leaders who don't represent us as LGBTQ people. And I'm always impressed when I go over to Europe and see that your leaders are trying to speak for the majority of LGBTQ people, whereas our leaders are not. And I think one of the most basic differences, if not the basic difference, between European LGBT culture and United States of America LGBT culture is, for the most part, European LGBT culture is sex positive. And in the United States, LGBT is sex negative, totally sex negative, focused on marriage, not sex. We're a country founded by Puritans. We are the cast-offs of... We got kicked out of England 250-some-odd years ago because we were so dowdy and anti-sex. And that's the people who founded this country. And it's stuck. It's in our throats. And if we have something to learn from European LGBT culture, it's the celebration of simply having a wonderful time fucking.
You think it's people are obsessed with marriage, even, you know, in the queer scenes?
In the queer scene here in the United States, no, goodness no. That's the sex positive element of the United States. The queer scene that I subscribe to, that I call family, that I call tribe, embrace sexual positivity, sex positivity, gender anarchy, whereas within the LGBT world. They may as well be straight, except for the gender of the partners they happen to have marital sex with. There's a vibrant sex positive scene in the United States, but it's been invisibilized and silenced.
What are the biggest inspirations in trans culture right now?
Trans culture where? And what part of trans culture? Trans culture is not a monolithic culture as of yet. There are genderqueer. And for me, one of the biggest inspirations is Matilda Bernstein. Just an amazing character.
What does she do?
A writer and political organizer on the West Coast. Sycamore Bernstein, is that right? Yeah. That's an inspiration to the genderqueer part of the trans culture. To the cross-dressing heterosexual male-to-female culture, there's right here in Seattle the Ingersoll Center, helping people come out of the closets in their heterosexual homes rather than wait till their wives leave the house and put on their panties and hope they never get caught. That's an inspiration. Rachel Maddow is an inspiration. I mean, what a trans thing she is. I would call her that. She's like this amazing butch who lets them put makeup on her. And that's a cross-dressing butch as far as I'm concerned. So she's trans, and she's secured herself an amazing space amongst newscasters in this country and speaks much more like a European voice than a United States voice. So she's an inspiration to me. My latest book came out about a year and a half ago. It's called Hello Cruel World, 101 Alternatives to Suicide for Teens, Freaks, and Other Outlaws. Some people refer to it as a suicide prevention book. I take great pains to say it is not a suicide prevention book, because I don't think anyone can prevent anyone from killing themselves. It's a list of other things to do besides killing yourself. And in all the suicide prevention books I'd read prior to writing this one, the only solution to not killing yourself was be good. Follow the word of the Lord. Obey the law. Obey your parents. And I'm going, wait a minute, that's exactly what makes me suicidal. I'm 60 years old, and I stayed alive by not being good. I stayed alive by not obeying the law. I stayed alive by being immoral, indecent, illegal. And so I wrote all those ways down and put them in a book. And the gist is this. What I've discovered is you do anything it takes to make your life more worth living. Anything, 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 anything. Break the law. Break your moral code. Throw ethics out the window. Doesn't matter. Do anything it takes to make your life more worth living at that moment, even if it's self-destructive. I've done a lot of self-destructive stuff that have helped me live another day. There's only one rule that makes that work, because that kind of blanket permission can encourage a great deal of horrible acts. So the one rule in the book is don't be mean. And as long as you're not mean to anybody, do whatever the fuck you want, but please stay alive, because freak that you are, you're valuable in this world.
How come you wanted to write the book?
Because too many of my, I call them my family, my extended family, queer kids have knuckled under to the culture of fear in the United States and have been killing themselves in greater and greater numbers. And that breaks my heart. And I wanted to let them know that there are other options. Not all of them involve being goody-goody. And you can go on, you know, If fucking your brains out is what's going to keep you alive and you're 17 years old, go ahead, fuck your brains out. Be careful, please. But go ahead. You know, what's this age shit? Well, if you're 12, I wouldn't recommend it. You know, unless it's with another 12-year-old. Then have a ball. But too many people have been knuckling under and thinking that LGBT, as spoken by the people who think they speak for all queers, that that's the only way to be LGBT or T in this country, and it's not. And to the degree that they can't live up to that by reasons of class or race or age or looks or ability or citizenship or any number of systems of oppression, they can't even live up to being marginalized as LGBT, well, then there's no hope. And my wish is that nobody ever needs my book. But that if they do, that it's there to give them some hope that they can be bad and still be good at the same time.
What experiences have people gotten from the book? Do you know what? How has it affected people?
I get email at least once a week, sometimes 2-3 times a week of, thank you, this has saved my life. And
how does that feel?
Blessed? Yeah. That, you know, to know that, you know, the work I've done actually is okay. I mean, who isn't insecure about their work? I'm insecure about my work. I'm going, oh my God, is this, am I just telling people to just run rampant and be fucked up? And is that even, and it is, because I know that those are the folks whose world I want to live in when I'm an older fart.
Thank you so much for taking your time to do this interview, Kate.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and I hope this helps bring about yet another bridge, because America could sure use your help.